The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Emil Monette, who is the Senior Advisor for Resilience and Cybersecurity at the GSA. Emil, how are you today?
Doing well, John. Thanks for having me.
My, what a title. Senior Advisor for Resilience and Cybersecurity. Boy, that can cover so many different topics. And believe me, on this show, 406 interviews, we've done every conceivable part of security, everything from enterprise architecture to mobile devices to operating systems to open source. But you come with a very unusual perspective. We had you on the air a couple years back, and you come from a perspective of an Air Force background and a law background and knowledge of how places up on Capitol Hill work. So it's a very interesting background you have, Emil. Why don't you tell the audience a little about how you wound up working for the GSA?
Sure. So I was a uniformed Air Force officer, and I was completing my final tour of duty and was going to law school at night, and a classmate of mine, I told him I was looking for a job, and he said, "Hey, my boss at GSA is looking for people. Why don't you come talk to him?" And the rest is history. And that was Roger Waldron, who is now he's got a show on Federal News Radio, and he's the president of the Coalition for Government Procurement.
Yeah, very well respected. I know Roger. He's a good guy. So come with good credentials here. So you've got a unusual background in many different levels, understanding policy from Capitol Hill, understanding policy from the legal perspective. And also, by the way, you've also worn the uniform, so it might have some background in that area. So lo and behold, February 12, 2013, we have something called EO-13636, Section 8E, issued from the White House. What the heck is that?
So the executive order was there were really two big things that came out of the executive order. One was the cybersecurity framework that NIST and in collaboration with the private sector developed. And the other was this tasking to GSA and DOD that the two agencies would make recommendations to the president about the feasibility and the benefits of incorporating cybersecurity into contract administration and formation.
And I think this Section 8E is titled Improving Cybersecurity and Resilience, Cybersecurity Acquisition. Is that right?
Yeah. And you know, you see the parallel to my,
yeah,
my job
so,
title.
So now I figured it out. So they said, who's going to do this? Well, Emil, he's got this good background for it. So just put him up and have a new title, a new position, everything else, huh?
Kind of how it happened. Got the rose pinned on me, and I went forth and, grabbed all my friends from around the government and industry to help make the right recommendations.
I have a friend who was in the Navy, and because his father was a lawyer, they named him chief legal officer on board because he had a background like that. So got a good background for understanding this. And so one of the tasks, I think, is this public-private cooperation. How have you tried to, work that out?
So the in the course of writing the report, we reached out to a lot of stakeholders. You know, we put a notice in the Federal Register. We went and spoke at a lot of different venues, and one of those venues that I came across in the course of that was the Software and Supply Chain Assurance Forum. So the SSCA, as we call it, it's a public-private collaboration that was started by DHS and DOD about 10 years ago.
So they foresaw some of this coming up.
They foresaw
up,
some
they?
Of yeah. this coming up, right? I mean, some of the problems we're addressing are decades old, and you know they're tough problems. I mean, some have called them intractable, but we've really jumped in here, and through the course of engaging with that public-private partnership, I brought GSA to the table and started to bring the acquisition workforce and the acquisition community into that knowledge space that the DOD and DHS had established. And it's really been a great venue. We get fantastic speakers from around government and from industry and from educational institutions. And it's free. It's free to attend. All you have to do is sign up. You can go to gsa.gov and go to the events list, and you'll see it in there, and there's a link. It'll take you right through, and you can sign up and come attend. And you don't have to attend the whole thing. It tends to run 3 days. You can come for one or two sessions. We'll have the agenda up there soon. And I'd really encourage people to come and
the way I found it was the good old-fashioned, go to Google, type in Software and Supply Chain Assurance Forum, and they had it in March. They have it coming up in June. I think the dates are somewhere around June 2nd and 4th in McLean at the MITRE Corporation, and it's free. And so if you're scratching your head trying to figure this out, you can sit in the back of the room and just listen. If you are more interested, you can grab people like Emil afterwards and grab them by the tie and go, well, hey, tell me really what the story is. And I like this face-to-face interaction at many of these different forums. And oh, by the way, this is GSA, DOD, but there's much more than that. NIST is involved. Who else?
NIST is involved as well. So a couple years ago, NIST joined as an official co-sponsor there. And then I brought GSA to the table, and we joined as a co-sponsor. But we get representatives from lots of different agencies, from the military departments, from NASA, from commerce, from energy, pretty much runs the gamut from in terms of the executive branch. We get staffers from the Hill. We get senior folks from large companies and small companies. We get some experts from local educational institutions. We even get international participation.
The UK connection from the one in March. That's interesting. And so the objective here is to come up with a solution for supply chain assurance. Is that kind of a forward summary of what you're trying to figure out here?
Yeah. And you know, the supply chain means different things to different people, right? I mean, supply chain traditionally has meant sort of gate-to-gate logistics, if you will. When we talk about supply chain in the context that we're talking about it now, it's really a bit broader than that. It's about, you could almost go all the way back to raw material extraction. It's where did you get those components? Where did you get those piece parts that go into your components? And what's the chain of custody? Who has touched those? What's the process used, and what's the technology involved? And when we talk about cybersecurity, it's really about the people, the processes, and the technology.
You know, when you talk about, I'm sure if I sat down with my daughter and said, well, geez, we're going to do a show on supply chain assurance. And she, oh, that's pretty boring. No. Pick up the newspaper. Think about Iran. Think about all the supply chains involved in developing certain products. I mean, this is really a key component of our cybersecurity, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, if you go two layers deep in any business relationship, maybe three, you have probably touched most countries on the earth. In today's economy, we have a global supply chain, and there's lots of good reasons for that. And that global supply chain has afforded us a lot of benefits as a society and as humans. However, that global supply chain also brings some risks because as a buyer, you don't necessarily know who is involved in providing those items to you, whether it's a product or a service. And when you're dealing with things like government information and personally identifiable information, PII, sensitive stuff, you want to make sure that you're protecting it well. And if you don't know who is involved with providing you that service or providing you that item, it's tough to have confidence in the fact that you're protecting it.
If you want to take just a generic application, you could say, let's say the Army wants a truck, and the truck have parts that are manufactured in the United States. So that's very simple. Next level up might be an electronic component of that truck. And is that electronic component manufactured in the United States? Well, I don't know how many more these days are. And where is that manufactured? Well, it goes back to supply chain. And you can follow that back to, let's say, Taiwan or whatever. And I think with some of the hardware, you can make sense. When it gets to software and other types of acquisition, it gets to be a little more difficult to follow that chain, doesn't it? I mean, is it hardware versus software? Is this the lines of dealing? Is it much more complicated than that?
Well, hardware and software are different things to establish confidence in, certainly. In the case of software, you've got people that are writing code. They go to an open source code library, and they pull down the pieces of code that they're going to use, and they add things to it. But what we found is that the libraries aren't always kept up to date, and people are grabbing source code that has known vulnerabilities And they're not patching it, and they don't get the most recent version that has the patches in it.
That's interesting. Let's take a break. We come back, we'll talk more about open source and supply chain and maybe autonomous vehicle functions, which is kind of a crossover for some of the things you're talking about today. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning is Emil Monette, Senior Advisor for Resilience and Cybersecurity at the GSA. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Emil Monette, Senior Advisor for Resilience and Cybersecurity. Quite an interesting background in acquisition. And what Emil is trying to do for the GSA is take this wide background he has and apply it to the world of acquisition and try to make this whole idea of supply chain assurance safer for everyone in the future. And before the break, we touched on hardware and software, and maybe let's bounce back to that and talk a little bit more about acquisition for open source versus proprietary software. I mean, do people think about this? Is this a topic at one of your forums?
It is. It is. It's sort of a core topic at the forums, and really the venue, the forums were started. They started as the software assurance forums back about 10 years ago. And we added supply chain in, three, 4 years ago when NIST became a co-sponsor, and then more recently when GSA became a co-sponsor, really bringing that federal acquisition system perspective.
So are there best practices? I noticed in the forum coming up in June, by the way, if you want to attend, all you have to do is type in software and supply chain assurance forum. It's free. One of the line agendas is Safe Code Buyer's Guide, SAFE, all in caps. So is that a proprietary document? Is it a GSA document? What's the Safe Code Buyer's Guide?
That is an industry-generated document, and it's a collaboration between a whole
public,
bunch of different
private
companies.
Public-private here.
Yeah. And that group of companies that generate that has gotten together and distilled their best practices for buying and provided that to the world for use.
So part of this forum is to take a document like this and examine it and look to improve it and change it, or is it distributed? What does the forum do in regards to this document, the Safe Buyer's Guide?
So it's kind of all of the above. I mean, one is to provide awareness to folks that are attending that, hey, this thing exists, and you know, we have a compilation, if you will, of best practices around buying software, and then the other is it is a living document, and those best practices will become better over time, and so part of that improvement process is engaging with interested folks and interested stakeholders, and the forum provides a good venue for that.
On Saturday, I was at George Mason University speaking to a Apple user group, about 60 folks in there, and after the meeting, someone was talking to me, and guess what Apple people are doing now? Looking at watches. And so I looked at my watch, and I said, that's a fascinating watch. Where'd you get it? And I said, I have no idea. And he looked up. Apparently, it's made in Denmark. I don't even know kind of where it's made. But what I think people are doing now is looking at things from the perspective of the supply chain and where it originates, because he wanted to know where that was made. That was the first question he asked. And I think more and more people there are asking about, where is this made? Where is this piece of software made? And where is this hardware made? And so can that be traced? Is there some way that when the military purchases something, an electronic component, is there some way to trace the actual components of that electronic device to its origin? And can it be certified somehow?
The short answer is yes. The longer answer is, we've been doing things like that for high assurance needs. So you think about things that the intelligence community buys, or that are national security systems, or major weapon systems that the Department of Defense buys. You can't afford to have a part or a component in one of those systems fail. And so that chain of custody, that pedigree and provenance of everything that goes into those high assurance systems is something that the government has been keeping tabs on for a long time. The problem is that the process used to do that and the mechanisms used to establish that confidence and establish that level of assurance is expensive, and it takes time. And so, the government spends a lot of money, and we buy a lot of things. Depending on the year, it's up to half a trillion dollars. And there's lots and lots of transactions that happen. many of which are, you know, not as much of a high assurance need as something that you would buy for an intelligence system or a major weapon system. And so, you know, that cost and time that goes into assuring those high end things is not something that is invested in the lower impact areas. And so one of the challenges here is to take a look at those processes and mechanisms and sort of peel back the things that are costing a lot of money and taking a lot of time, but maintain in that space. The things that will give you the required level of confidence in the item that you're buying, whether it's product or service.
Yeah, it's got to be a filter of priorities depending on necessity. Like my watch, who cares about my watch? But I imagine a component for a military vehicle or aerospace community. I know in the aerospace community, there's something called MROs. They're maintenance reliability organizations, and they have focus on a lot of different aspects of replacement parts. And I notice in the forum coming up in June, there is a group. And one of the topics is going to be counterfeit microelectronics working group. My. There's a whole working group because it's assumed that counterfeit's out there. The question is, how do you prevent that?
Right. So the counterfeit microelectronics working group is actually a group that was started by an attorney in the Department of Justice in the Washington office, Sherry Shorenstein. Fabulous woman.
She just got mad and said, "I'm sick of this."
Well, she actually made some press because she led the case in the first prosecution of a counterfeit microelectronic case, and she won.
Mm.
And so out of that, this community sort of grew, and it mostly is a law enforcement sort of. Perspective. So you've got your attorneys in there. You've got your IGs. Your investigative services out of the military departments and other departments and agencies. But they've really focused in on this problem that's been pretty well publicized that we've got a big issue with counterfeit microchips getting into sensitive systems and a lot of the people perpetrating that activity are criminals. But the sort of nation state bad actors are perhaps in that mix as well. And so, again, it goes back to this idea of assuring the supply chain. And in the case of microelectronics, you know, it's who is involved in the manufacturing. And then let's do chain of custody from the time it gets off the table at the plant till the time it goes into the system.
I was in a discussion with some software developers the other day, and one of my suggestions was, how does someone else do it? How does another company solve this particular problem? It was within software integration. But I'd like to take, how do other countries solve this problem? What about the UK? So the UK actually presented at your last forum. Well, they must be encountering the same types of problems.
They absolutely are. And what is interesting and frankly encouraging is that without explicit engagement in the past, continued engagement anyway, we have actually been running parallel paths with the Brits, and now we're bringing the communities together in the forum, and first off discovering that we're running on parallel paths, but also sharing best practices and sharing information. So it's really been a hugely beneficial engagement there.
So with each one of your forums, we have a different emphasis. In March, it was enterprise risk management. And in June, it's going to be process practices, acquisition, different types of work groups for that. What I noticed is that sometimes you talk about trusted identity. This is a crossover for supply chain as well?
Well, it is, yes. If you think about trust, right? If you're going to trust an individual, if you're going to trust an organization, there's lots of things you might look to establish that trust. But at the very bottom is the idea and the fact that the person or the organization that you are talking to or engaging with is who they say they are. So it's a very foundational element of establishing trust or confidence.
And there's a whole framework based on that. Part of the risk management framework is just identity, huh?
Right. Right. So what's great is we're able to take that body of work that's been done and the government anyway has been working on trusted identity for some time. And there's a lot of good work that's gone in there, and we're able to leverage that to to promote our supply chain assurance form.
Great. Let's take a break. When we come back, let's maybe focus in on software. And many of my listeners are federal IT professionals. They may have some questions about software and what that's got to do with supply chain assurance, and maybe take advantage of some of the topics that you present at these different forums. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio is Emil Monette, Senior Advisor for Resilience and Cybersecurity at GSA. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In case you haven't figured this out, this is also a podcast. You can go to the Apple iTunes place and type in Federal Tech Talk or Federal News Radio and download this interview with Emil and listen to it on the way to work. A lot of people get information from podcasts, people get information from blogs, and I write a blog called Tech Tuesday Blog. And do you write a blog? Is there a blog you can recommend for our listeners to keep up with the technology, Emil?
You know, I don't write one regularly. I will post things on my LinkedIn profile from time to time, and that's about the extent of it. Being more regular with that kind of activity is something that's on my list this year to get more involved in. I get a lot of information from different sources. You know, Krebs on Security is one that I get the emails from and I'll go to and read. The DC, I think of them as DC trade publications, you know, Government Executive or Federal Computer Week or some of those that are focused on the federal government or other places that I...
Does your forum have any kind of a Twitter presence, or you tweet out from the forum, or does it have a handle or anything?
We are working on it. So we just very recently established a site, a microsite, I guess, on the GSA Interact website. So if you go to GSA Interact, there's lots of different subjects on there. Some of them have to do with ongoing efforts like maybe service contracting or things like that that GSA is interested in, and others are things like the Alliant GWAC has a pretty big presence there, and they are in the process of doing market research and looking forward to the next Alliant GWAC, which will be coming pretty soon, a couple of years. So we've established a site there for the SSCA. Unfortunately, there's not a whole lot on the site yet, but we're gonna put some effort into that and get some content up there and be able to have a library where we've got presentations and things like that.
We could have 100 listeners and 100 different ways to get information, and I never know how people get information, but it's done in a nonlinear fashion. I know that, and it's connect to this, link to that. I saw this there, and information gets out by hook or by crook. Okay, so let's say I'm working at the GSA. And I have a printer down the hall, and the printer fails. So I call up ABC Company. They come out, and they replace the circuit board, and it's working fine. Well, I'm all happy. I really don't care where that circuit board came from, but maybe this has got something to do with supply chain, maybe with Microsoft Electronics. And we can go down that rabbit hole for hours and hours and hours. I want to switch out to software. So let's say I'm working at the GSA, and I'm working on a Salesforce project or some kind of a project there, and there's an update to the software. And it's open source software. And parallel with the printer, instead of getting a circuit board, they may take a block of code from somewhere and plug it in to solve the problem or update the problem. So parallel world here, is this a real similar situation, or am I just making this up?
No, it's you're spot on. I mean, the software is more dynamic than hardware. I mean, then that it's somewhat logical, right? You have a piece of hardware, whether it's your phone or the printer that you're talking about, and it's relatively static, right? You might get a replacement part and put it in, but even that is pretty static. Software, updates to software happen pretty frequently, and you might test and really get a good look at and establish some confidence in that first version of the software that you purchase. But guess what? When they come next week and do an upgrade, an update, you're gonna have to go through all of that again and make sure that those open source packets that were pulled down and used in the update were the most recent version, that they didn't have any known vulnerabilities in them, and that they were patched properly and all the rest.
So, are there counterfeit patches with malicious code in? I don't want to give anyone ideas. I'm just trying to connect the dots here. I can't imagine it.
I can imagine too. And I'm not a technologist. I'm liberal arts major with a law degree, and I'm sort of a technological immigrant, if you will. But I've learned over the last few years something about this field, and I think the short answer to your question is yes, it's certainly possible. The software is code, and somebody writes it, and I hear about all kinds of things that are left in code that are non-malicious, and so certainly someone with intent could put something in code that would be bad for the end user.
We have had people sitting in that chair years ago talking about, mandatory move to the cloud. Okay. So we have situations where technology is moving to the cloud. Normally with cloud providers, there's something called a service level agreement where they say, well, if you move to this cloud, we'll provide this number of nines or this number of somethings for this. And does managing a service level agreement and risks, does that all fit in with this whole idea of software and supply chain assurance?
It absolutely does. SLAs are tough. One of the challenges in this space is that it's nascent, that it's moving. It's a moving target. And every time we think we've protected ourselves adequately through an SLA or otherwise, the bad guys change their tactics and go to our soft spot.
So that's where the SLA fits in, is that it's part and parcel of considering the whole supply chain. That's part of the chain.
It is.
What about this whole concept of moving to the cloud? I don't know any specific cloud agenda items. Is this going to come up with one of the forms, or is that just something that NIST is responsible for, or a separate topic completely?
Well, the basic premise here is that anytime you buy something, you're making choices that affect security. And if you're buying something, whether it's cloud or whatever it is, and you're buying it from a seller that has inadequate security, you're opening yourself up to risk. And if you look at big breaches and small breaches, but I'll just throw out a couple. We had F-22, that the plans got stolen. We had the Black Friday debacle a couple of years ago with the big retailer there, Target. And we had a big breach of government personnel security clearance data last summer. And all of those, and lots of others, have been facilitated or precipitated by a third party, a vendor, right? Maybe not the prime contractor in any of those instances, but one of the prime contractor's suppliers. Buyers are really looking for more information about who they're doing business with and what goes into the secret sauce to make up that deliverable.
One aspect of this forum is different organizations, different agencies working together. In the early days of security, it was more static type security. Now it's become more continuous with continuous monitoring. I imagine that the cyber defense is becoming integrated and adaptive too. That's an agenda item when your meeting coming up here in June. Do you see these different disparate groups working together and adapting cyber defense?
Yes, absolutely. So
you hope so.
that's the idea. We get them together and put them in the room and hope they talk, right?
Yeah.
There's always some tension between the offensive cyber guys and the defensive cyber guys. Right, because
that cuts through all the agencies too.
Well, exactly. So the offensive guys aren't necessarily going to tell the defensive guys everything they're doing, even though that if they did, it would probably help the defensive guys. There those are sort of separate worlds. However, there are some immigrants both ways, and we are getting some cross pollination and certainly working together to the extent that we can.
When it comes to autonomous vehicles, we talked about that earlier. Is this really under consideration? Is that they're really being considered vulnerable and people are hacking them? Or is this just like a news item that I see? Is this actually happening?
Well, it is. And it's rather frightening. If you go to a vehicle, not my vehicle, it's too old, but if you go to a new vehicle, there is a ton of software in there and there's a CPU in there. And what we've identified is some real vulnerabilities in the ways that the entertainment system, for example, or the Bluetooth system connects to the vehicle control systems, or it's not firewalled appropriately. And so there's some vulnerabilities there. You know, I've seen videos of a guy standing on the street corner hacking into a car and slamming on its brakes as it's driving by, and it's kind of nuts.
It falls with supply chain assurance. That falls exactly in that area. Let's take a break, come back. We'll talk more about what's going to happen in the future of this whole supply chain assurance and maybe some of your personal technology choices, see if it's been impacted by some of your activities. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Emil Monette, Senior Advisor for Resilience and Cybersecurity at the GSA. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Emil Monette, Senior Advisor for Resilience and Cybersecurity at GSA. We've been talking about the form that comes up 4 or 5 times a year. If you want to get more information on this form, you just type in Software and Supply Chain Assurance Forum. We talked about hardware. We talked about software. And not much of a Twitter presence, I guess. Is there some kind of a Twitter handle that one can follow? GSA must have some Twitter handles to follow. Is that right?
GSA does have official Twitter accounts and other social media accounts. I have in the past posted on some of those things myself, but certainly lots of other leaders from around the agency use that as well.
It's just a source, you know. Old geezers like me read a newspaper, but people under 30, under 40, they have 20 different ways to get information, all kinds of different ways through RSS feeds, and I always let people know that Twitter is a way to get information. You may not believe some of the information, or it may be irritating information, but it's definitely going to be information. You know, people have been listening to you, and you said, oh, you come from a liberal arts background, but, you know, you're dealing a lot with technology. So I've come up with a 10-question test to find out if, in fact, you are a card-carrying nerd. So my first question is, do you have an Instagram account?
I do.
And how many cell phones have you purchased for yourself in the last year?
I have not purchased one in the last year.
Loose points there. Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I do.
And have you ever used Meerkat or Periscope?
What?
Well, you're losing nerd points here. What kind of smartphone do you have?
I have an iPhone.
Okay. What's the most popular app on that phone in the last 30 days?
It's got to be weather or Yelp.
Yelp, huh? That's interesting.
I eat and I go outdoors.
And how many tablet devices do we have we break into your house? How many do we see floating around that house?
You would see one.
What was your most recent post in social networking site?
Posted something to my Twitter feed, I believe, yesterday, day before.
And you have an article on LinkedIn as well, don't you?
I have an article on LinkedIn.
That's bragging rights there. And do you have a mobile fitness device on your person anywhere?
I do not.
A lot of people are switching to smartphones for that. And last book you read was electronic or paper?
Paper. I'm a paper book guy.
You're trending towards normalcy and not nerdy, so you're not much of a nerd, you know?
I'm an immigrant. I'm trying to get nerdier.
I've had people say, we have 5 tablets at home. Wow! just amazing. And a number of apps people use, it's fascinating. I try to get a grasp on it, but I think with some policy issues, sometimes you can get, you know, dragged into some of these technology things. You know, when I look at this document, the EO Executive Order 13636, I see the date on it, February 12, 2013. Now, from my perspective, that's relatively new. I mean, that's just been around for a couple of years here, and it really has to get, you know, grow up and get some maturity. Do you think it's going to improve? What do you think is going to happen with this next couple? Is it going to be more executive orders like this? Is it accomplished some of its tasks? Or tell us about this 136136.
Well, you're much more patient than I am. I look at 2013 and I say, Jesus, 2015 now. What have we done? But you know, when I step back from that, I can see where we've had an unprecedented level of cooperation and collaboration between the agencies in addressing the issues that were in that report that DOD and GSA signed out, and we are moving forward in implementation, and you know. There are constitutional reasons why it takes a long time to do things in the government, and those are good reasons. But I think in the future here, we will continue to see the implementation of the 6 recommendations in that GSA DOD report. We will continue to see more focus by the government on supply chain assurance and gaining and using information about the things that we buy in the government.
So who would be a good person to attend one of these forums? Would it be someone who works in procurement? Would it be someone maybe who is an enterprise architect who's specifying products? Would it be a project manager who's worried about it? I mean, who's the typical person that would attend one of these events, and what would they take away from them?
All of the above.
Everything from procurement.
Mm. Yeah. So the events and the community really grew up in a technically focused sort of realm. But we have brought in the acquisition community. We have folks from folks of all different stripes in there. You know, your attorneys, you've got your project managers, you got your CISOs, your CIOs, you know, policy guys like me, and it's becoming a primary place for us to bring these somewhat disparate communities together. And so, yeah, I mean, people that deal in finance, you know. That finance officer needs to understand when the project manager comes back and says, hey, I need another zero before the decimal point on my project here so I can address the security concerns. That finance officer needs to be in the game as well and understand why that's going in and what it costs.
Are there parallels in the commercial world for this? I mean, regular companies in Chicago and Tulsa and Florida, do they have these concerns as well?
They absolutely do. They absolutely do. So, I mean, you think about, you know, what are the crown jewels of a commercial company? It's typically IP. It's intellectual property. And, you know, that stuff resides on a server somewhere. And if a criminal or a competitor was to gain access to that, can do significant damage to a commercial entity.
This is one of the themes of the show over the years I've learned is that many of my govies, they wail and moan and go, oh, woe is me. We did this and we screwed up here and they stole this from us and that. Well, guess what? It's happening in Tulsa. It's happening in Seattle. It's happening in L.A. This is just the nature of the world today. It's got nothing to do with being a govvy. I know very hardworking, disciplined, methodical federal IT professionals who cover all their bases, and there's some that don't. And same thing in the commercial world. And guess what? It's not as publicized as well. I'm getting the hint that many of these things happen, but like with banks, well, we really don't talk about what happened or this guy. So, but you got to air your dirty laundry here in the federal government really quickly, don't you? I mean, it's going to come out.
Right. I mean, you can look at, SEC filings and there was a rule made not too long ago by the SEC that cybersecurity is a material matter for those kind of disclosures. And so companies, public companies anyway, have to disclose that. And certainly where you have a privately held company, that information might not be as readily available. And in certain instances, you know, the victim probably, number one, doesn't want to make it broadly known that they were a victim, and possibly, you know, doing so can cause more harm. So it's a pervasive, cross-cutting issue that we've all got to deal with.
There's no doubt about that. When it comes to new executive orders, is there anything in the works? Do you see something coming out or anything coming up in the next 6-8 months?
You know, I don't really have my fingers on the pulse of what the executive order pipeline is, if there is one. We did have an executive order recently, not too long ago, a few months back, that is focused on information sharing. And I think that is a hugely beneficial activity. You know, DHS provides a great service to pretty much anybody who signs up. You got to sign some paperwork. And DHS has to trust you. They have to know who you are, going back to identity that we talked about. But yeah, you can get all the structured threat information and have some actionable things to, you know, take a look at your own enterprise and see where the vulnerabilities are and start addressing them.
So crystal ball time, look down the road 5 years, 10 years. Do you think there's going to be more cooperation between agencies in this endeavor? Do you think they're going to have a good resolution? Or do you think there's going to be a significant event and people can start scratching their head going, hey, we should have gone to this forum 6 months ago?
Probably both, unfortunately. I'm greatly encouraged by the level of collaboration and cooperation between the agencies that we've got. And I think that will continue. I mean, we're sowing the seeds for that to continue. Unfortunately, we are probably going to see lots of significant events, and you know, It's just the state of nature, if you will.
No choice there. We got about 30 seconds to close out the show here. We want to talk about the forum and promote a little bit and let people know where it's at. So the one coming up in June is going to be Process Practices Acquisition Workgroup. Is that right?
That's correct, right. And we're really focusing in on the standards organizations and what the state of the art is in software testing, for example, hardware testing, establishing confidence in those things that you buy.
Free event. There's looks like there's four forums a year. This is the Summer Event 2015. It's in suburban Washington, D.C., out in McLean, I think, at MITRE headquarters. And I've been out there many times. I know the room. It's a good room. And NIST usually contributes a lot because NIST has strong connections just everywhere in the government. I'm amazed at their connections and outside the government. And I think UL is going to be presenting at this one. Is that right?
UL is. We have really exciting development is that UL Labs is stepping into the software assurance space. And I don't know if I'm breaking news here. I don't know if UL has made any announcement, but last week in San Francisco, sat down with them for a couple hours and talked through what they're up to, and it's really exciting.
Yes, they're a commercial company, and they're trying to grow, so this is a new world for them. I'd like to thank my guest here. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank Emil Monette, Senior Advisor for Resilience and Cybersecurity at the GSA. Thanks, Emil.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Management Friday on Federal News Radio. Friday mornings at 10, Aileen Black and Gigi Shum host Women of Washington. Hear from Washington, D.C.'s ambitious and influential female executives, role models for the next generation Washington leader. Then at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dort to learn the best career path for you. Management Friday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.